This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Good evening, I'm David Gale. On tonight's edition of The Informer, we speak with John Manwaring about tonight's VAC hypothetical and chat with Karen Field and Mark Camilleri from Drummond Street Services Queer Space. The VAC hypothetical is back, and this year things are getting criminal with Who Killed Sharon Swallows. There's a fresh lineup of panellists. They'll be led down the garden path and woven into a fictional storyline to tackle a range of social issues faced by our community. Hosted by Adam Richard, the night is a highlight to the midsummer lineup. Didn't get a ticket to this free event? Can't make it to the event? Well, the 2017 hypothetical, Who Killed Sharon Swallows, will be broadcast live on Melbourne's Channel 31 and live streamed on the VAC's Facebook page. It's commencing at 7 p.m. straight after The Informer, and tonight we're joined by John Manwaring, VAC policy analyst and hypothetical coordinator. Welcome, John.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Wow, you must be almost pulling your hair out because it starts in only a few minutes.
I've been running my feet off a little bit today. I'm ready for a pint and a nap. So.
Hey, first, can you tell us, before you have that pint, who's in the lineup for the hypothetical?
Yeah, it's a good one. I'm really excited for this year. So try to get a diverse range of people every year. But starting off, we've got Judith Lucy, everybody's favorite crazy woman.
Crazy comedian.
She's insane, but yes, we love her. Joel Murray, he works at Living Positive Victoria as a policy worker, but he's a candidate for the sex party at most every election.
He's
just generally an awesome guy. Michelle Shepard, Joy's very own Michelle Shepard, hosts Transpositions.
One of the Joy celebrities.
Oh, yeah. Also won a Globe Award for founding LGBTIjobs.com.au, so very good work there. Dennis Altman, if you haven't heard of Dennis Altman, then you are probably under the age of 18.
Yes.
And need to educate yourself. He is...
Google that.
Author, writer. He's a wonderful man.
He's everybody.
Edwina Wright, my favorite person in the world ever. She is a researcher at the Alfred Hospital.
She's
HIV.
At the Burnet?
Burnet Alfred Hospital, but primarily based at Alfred because she's an HIV researcher and clinician. She's responsible for basically not single-handedly. She's responsible for the PrEP trials in Victoria. She's an amazing woman. Benjamin Law, he's a writer. His memoirs were turned into a TV show called The Family Law. Excellent guy. Again, Karen Price, colleague, deputy CEO of ACON, Vax counterpart in New South Wales. David Marr, who I confess, I'm sorry, David, I did not know who you were until my boss
David
told me.
Marr?
I'm not one to watch Channel 9, 7, or 10 ever.
Big name.
Yes, so I'll have to ingratiate myself to him tonight.
Yes.
And wouldn't be complete without a shout out to Joy's own CEO and our final panelist, Tennille Moiselle. She is a wizard. She does everything. And so it'll be exciting to have her there.
See, I don't know whether she's included in the class of Joy Celebrity, but she's definitely a renaissance woman. She's an amazing woman to talk
to. She is indeed.
Yeah, she seems to pop up everywhere
you turn
your head.
Now, look, we never know which way the story's going to go, but would you be able to give us a scoop on the issues that the panelists will be presented with? Hopefully they're not listening right now.
Yeah,
don't want to give too much away.
Yeah, never know which way it's going to go, but like, what sort of things are you going to be looking at?
Well, every year, this is the third year we've done the hypothetical, and we try and address things that have happened in the past year, things that we expect to happen in the year to come. So a lot of it's going to be revolving around journalism, the alt-right neo-Nazi identity politics, freedom of speech. We're even maybe even broaching the amendments to Section 18C of the Racial Discrimination Act, homophobia, stigma, transphobia. But I think what's really interesting is because of this kind of sea change in politics and everything that's happened in this past year with the rise of the right, there's a lot that really revolves around that. So rather than focusing on some of the, I don't want to call them small boy issues, but like the really specific issues to the LGBTI community, we're focusing on some pretty big stuff and seeing how that affects our community. So,
do you think we'll be talking about Corey Bernardian and his new husband? Or,
this is news to me.
Well, exactly. But, that's the way the sort of hypotheticals twist into unusual areas.
I can't give away that much detail. What I can say is it's a murder mystery a la Agatha Christie, though not quite so erudite and articulate as Agatha Christie.
We don't know who did it yet.
I do know I might know who did it. Yeah, but my lips are sealed because I maybe helped edit it down. No, it'll be a really good show. I'm really excited for this one because in the past, we've done it 3 years, and the past shows have been, I don't think we realized what it would become for us. We thought it would be a one-off thing, and it slowly evolved into something that the community really values. And so, I like what we're doing.
This is the first time it's being held at Deakin Edge at Federation Square?
It's actually the second, but it's interesting because last year we didn't quite sell out. We filled it because it's quite a large venue, but this year we more than sold out. We had to get them to put in additional seating, and hence the decision to broadcast it live on Facebook and Channel 31 so we can reach as many people as possible.
Also, when you say sell out, it is actually a free event that people have to register. So you can't just rock up, unfortunately.
Exactly. A bit of a shorthand term for it.
And being the third one, this is the first time you're going to be streaming too.
Yeah, that's right. It's something we've looked into as an organization because, again, we want to reach many people as we possibly can at our forums because we run smaller forums throughout the year that are sometimes well attended and sometimes not. So this is a test. We'll see how it goes and hopefully it pulls off well.
So if you want to check it out at 7 o'clock in minutes time, you'll be able to watch it live on Channel 31 or you can go to the VAC Facebook page and watch a live stream. Now, there is one other thing. And we can't actually talk about it. The VAC has a major announcement coming up at the actual hypothetical.
It's going to be included as part of it.
We're right at the end of the show, we'll be making an announcement, and it's I myself only found out about it about 3 days ago, and it's really exciting and
great.
It's something that everybody needs to stay
tuned
and listen
to. You have no idea. We would die to break this story on the Informer, but we're not allowed to. And in fact, really, if you want to find out what's happening, just go to the Facebook page for the VAC, and you will be able to see it live streamed and find out what the announcement is.
Lots of fun jokes preceding the announcement. So watch the hypothetical.
Yeah, watch the whole thing. Watch the whole thing.
Facebook.com/vac.org.au or that's just look correct. Up vac.org.au on the Facebook page. I'm excited about it. What about you, Paul?
Absolutely. I'll be watching.
We'd be going, but we're going to do the Informer. And so in less than 20 minutes' time, make sure you do check this out.
Yes, indeed.
Thanks for coming, John.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Queer Space provides a safe and supportive space to obtain information and support services aimed at improving mental health and well-being by specialist queer and queer affirmative mental health practitioners. Tonight on The Informer, we're joined by Karen Field, CEO of Drummond Street Services, and Mark Camilleri, child and family practitioner. I met them both at Midsummer Carnival and had a chat about the statistics they have compiled regarding young people needing their services over the past 12 months. Hello, Karen and Mark.
Hi.
Hello. Hey,
look,
Ken.
You know, it was a quick chat at Midsummer, but I was surprised about the statistics that you've been compiling. Can you first tell us what Drummond Street Services does for our community?
Yeah, Drummond Street amazingly has about a 40-year history of providing in the main relationship counselling some time ago for the queer community. And over the last 12 years, this has grown into now its own organisation called Queer Space that's been developed and driven by a group of queer practitioners to respond to community needs.
Drummond Street is still so much more than that, but obviously we're here to talk about Queer Space, but what other services do they provide then?
Yeah, Queer Space or Drummond Street? Drummond Street larger, and this is where the kind of intersectionality kind of helps. We provide huge range of services to our refugee community. We have child and family, mental health services, relationship counselling, family relationship separation support, a huge range of parenting programs. And what we've been able to do is put that kind of layer over that work around these are issues that impact and intersect with our LGBTI community.
Would it have been that Drummond Street just sort of started off by serving, you know, certainly 30 or 40 years ago, it was sort of not really a disadvantaged area, but certainly a university hub for students and maybe it wasn't exactly, you know, the Carlton that we know now, so maybe people that were already at disadvantage. So Drummond Street Services sort of addressed their needs? Is that sort of how it all started?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in the main, most of those services way back then would have been for gay and lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
But now what we've seen is probably, you know, 25 5% of our client base in the last 12 months has been gender diverse children and young people and their families, and also a huge number of trans women and trans men and gender diverse adults.
And as you say, that's how Queer Space has been born, through the need. What can you tell us about the statistics that we were discussing on Sunday and the trends that you're seeing in those statistics?
Yeah, what we've seen, and I guess that was our way of actually looking at that data, was to go, what is going on here? We've seen a twofold increase in really distressed, psychologically distressed clients, sex and gender diverse children, but right across all age groups, coming to Drummond Street, who have been really distressed by a lot about what's been going on politically, in terms of the safer schools, the marriage,
the plebiscite.
You know, the birth certificate legislation changes. Yeah. And what we've seen is those, you know, those people have been really distressed by what's happening in both the media, but the social commentary, and also real experiences in terms of increases in the way in which people act out their trans and homophobia within the community largely.
Yeah, I saw, look, that in 2015 you saw about 470 LGBTIQ clients, and then last year in 2016 a bit over, or around about 700. So, yeah, it's almost a twofold increase. And also, there's trans and gender diverse clients. 91 of those were trans and gender diverse. 144 cases were sex and gender diverse children and young people under 25 years old. And also 62% of all LGBTIQ cases involve previous histories of family and community violence and a range of co-occurring health risk issues. I mean, these are pretty big statistics.
Yeah, I think our community, you know, we're constantly living with that white noise of homophobia and transphobia, but then when people are given a voice to their, you know, it legitimises their homophobia and transphobia through safe schools and plebiscite, and so if that increases the psychological distress that our community lives with all the time anyway, and so for anyone who might be vulnerable or feeling a bit fragile or something, you know, not going right in their life at the moment, you know, it quite escalates, and therefore that's why we are seeing this increase in the clients that we normally would see anyway.
Yeah, but look, Mark, at the same time, you know, it's good that these debates are brought to the fore, and we can't say, well, look, we can't have these debates. But, you know, the plebiscite is a great pointed issue because we could have gone to a yes and no campaign. So what do you think would have happened if the plebiscite bill had gone ahead? We'd be, I think, Paul, we'd be almost up to getting ready to vote for the plebiscite. But what sort of difference would that have made to the clients that you're seeing?
Well, as I said, because it now gives a forum for those things to be aired publicly, you know, if someone's got homophobia in that and they don't really say it, you know, it's not really going to have too much an effect on our queer communities. But when it's given that platform, anyone who has that almost the vulnerability already, it just escalates, as I said before, that white noise of the discrimination that we're constantly living with, because it then gives it that legitimizes it. So particularly in those political arenas, and then of course it goes into the media, and therefore it permeates into these vulnerable people to increase their psychological distress.
So a plebiscite yes no campaign would have given more voice. Well, and this is why, you know, so many people were advocating to kill the plebiscite. I know there was a small part of the community that was saying, look, we just want to get same-sex marriage up there, let's go ahead. But the majority of people, having thought it through, were saying, look, let's kill this bill. But even before that bill was killed, there was still a lot of noise, as you talk.
And we saw it in safe schools as well. Like, young people are naturally vulnerable because they don't have those queer communities around them. They haven't developed that little gang of queers to keep them, you know, when they're not feeling safe, to go, hey, I had a shitty day today. So young people are particularly vulnerable. And so with that whole safe schools thing, you know, seeing these young people, normally I'd go, oh, you know, what do we want to do? And they'd say, oh, let's do some type of celebration. This time they were saying, actually, we just want to do something for us to actually actually look after ourselves. Let's do some self-care. And I was like, I wonder where that's coming from, because they actually were feeling threatened.
See, we can go to the safe school rallies and see the really strong kids, and we go, oh, yeah, everybody's okay. But then, of course, you're seeing the other side of this.
And particularly if you're, you know, if you're rural, if you're non-supportive family, if you're coming from a conservative, religious or cultural background, and you're a young person, that's already two strikes against you, and then you happen to be queer, trans, you know, it's you're quite vulnerable.
I think one of the interesting things that you mentioned about the rally that didn't strike me in the planning for it was that we saw a whole group of young people who came down there who were not out to anyone. And they had heard, they'd seen it on the press or that, you know, seen mention of this rally and they turned up there. They just wanted to find people who they may well be able to connect with.
Who are the same as them.
It's the same as them.
Because if I'm the only gay in the village, feel really bad about myself. Yep. My self-esteem is down, of course. So, I can see what you mean by that. Yep. That's great.
And you're less likely to put your head above the trenches if you know there's a warfare going up there.
If you think you're the only one there.
Yeah, that's
so what sort of discrimination are your LGBTI clients coming to you with? What sort of issues are you dealing with?
What's the full? It's the full gamut. Yeah. So,
it's the same horror stories. You know, it's still, you know, young people being kicked out of home.
Right.
It's still lots of anxiety, depression. You know, just that not feeling good about themselves, and it's all this internalized homophobia that they sort of come in with it that presents as anxiety and depression.
Yeah.
But when you come back, when you unpick it, it's all about gay is not good. Mm. There's something wrong with me. I shouldn't be trans. I should be like this. And you know that heteronormative assumptions that the world operates by.
Yeah.
You know. It's just all the same stuff, but it's the intensity of it. And because of these public forums.
We can walk down Chapel Street and see, such as last year, things put onto tram stops and billboards and things like that. The messages are out there. Or if we're old school like I am, we're going to flick on the TV and maybe see some almost nameless politician on TV. Corey Bernardi, or one of the other people. You know, we interviewed Senator Abetz last year about his opposition to marriage equality, but we will see that all the time. There are other spaces, though, that people, certainly young people, get messages. What sort of spaces would they be getting their messages from?
Everything from public transport to, we've had community leaders that have been attacked leaving restaurants. You know, there's been this kind of weird enactment of people who previously might have sort of kept themselves in check or have yelled out something to actually follow that up and hassle people. And we've seen taxis that have refused to pick up people.
Wow.
We've, it's been this kind of on every single level of people's operating lives on a day-to-day basis. They're having to think more carefully about their safety.
And that would, of course, include social media because, as you said, you're dealing with a lot of younger people and these days young people are all over social media.
Yeah, the trolling,
Our community's all over social media.
Well, yes.
And so we're all seeing it. You know, we've got elders in this community who feel like we've gone 20 years back. I haven't seen things like this said in 20 years and here I am again. So it's right across age groups that people have been really impacted by this.
Mm. Yeah, look, social media certainly makes a difference, especially with younger people maybe being bullied. We talked to Jill Hennessy earlier this year who'd been bullied herself, and she was able to speak out about that because she was saying, look, basically I don't want my daughters to go through the same thing, whether it be bullying within school, and they certainly weren't necessarily LGBTIQ, but the fact that they would go, oh, well, this is normal. This is just what happens. She stood up and spoke out about it. At the same time, she was actually accused by the anti-vaxxers by saying, oh, this was all a hoax and you actually just put this up in order to push your, make sure you get vaccinated thing. So, it just gets so mixed up and so muddled up. So I can imagine that young people would start to get a little bit muddled up in their own messages.
Yeah, definitely. Even I noticed Premier Daniel Andrews on International Day Against Homophobia posted the letters that he gets, the homophobic letters going, why are you supporting gay people? You know, they don't deserve rights. They, all the homophobia.
And I
thought, him putting it out there, I thought, if he is worried about the trolling he gets, if you're, a young person, a young trans person, a person from a rural, you're only gay in the village, they don't have the resources or the resilience that maybe adults have.
Yep.
Even the adult community, with the queer community, we feel it.
So how do people actually access your services? How do they know about Queer Space for a start? I mean, I only learnt about your organisation. I knew about Drummond Street Services, but I certainly didn't know about Queer Space. So how do people find out about you?
We have a very active website, and most of the LGBTI community organisations kind of know we exist. We get a lot of referrals from queer-friendly GPs, for instance. And as you can tell by those statistics, we don't have any problem in accessing clients. It's more around kind of meeting demand. Anyone can ring our service. And I think the important thing to say to this community is that we can provide free services for those people who can't afford services. And that's really, really critical.
And there are some people that do obviously support your organisation. We have an SMS message from Brad, who is also known as Laird Leatherman for 2016. Good to see the Informer is giving some publicity to Queer Space by Drummond Street Services. They do great work within our community, which is why this year all funds I raise as Laird Leatherman go to support them. So thank you for Brad for that SMS. And also he wanted to know when the podcast for tonight is up. It will be up quite soon after the program, so probably about an hour or so afterwards, if you want to also have a look for a link to Queer Space, which we'll certainly put in that as well. So who else uses your services? People, well, obviously Queer Space, LGBTIQ. You talked about...
As Karen was saying before, sometimes like... one of our practitioners might be seeing the young person, and I might actually see the parents.
Right.
So it's not just for the... So I might be seeing the parents to support them about coping with their young persons, whatever going on for their young person, transitioning or coming out as gay or lesbian. And the same, like, we might see siblings, we might see couples. So we might see sort of queer couples that are going through different X, Ys and Zs. And, of course, and people self-refer as well.
And also, you know, you're talking about parents and children, there could be homophobia, obviously between parents and children, or transphobia and
definitely.
Other things like that.
Yes.
So are you treating many of those sorts of cases?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that has been really lacking is support for parents and families. They want to do the right thing by their kids. Some people struggle with them. And if we don't provide services to help them through that, it's hardly surprising that we end up with these kids in all sorts of bother. And, you know, often it can end up in homelessness, you know, in some cases. Yeah. We can end up in family violence and a whole range of other issues. So we've got really specialist clinicians that are able to work with the different people within that family, work with dads. You know, I think we often make assumptions about why parents are struggling with issues. And one of the cases that I remember incredibly well was a 14-year-old young gay man who was really struggling with his parents, and in particular dad. Not an unusual story.
No.
But the assumptions were that dad was homophobic.
Right.
In fact, through clinical work with that dad, we were able to discover that actually dad had experienced child sexual abuse himself.
Right.
And was really terrified that his son was going to be vulnerable to that.
Yeah.
And so if we make assumptions without actually working with families, we know it's hugely protective for all of us, regardless, that we can actually get them through this, and that they are incredibly supportive, and they are in the life of these young people for their whole lives.
Yes.
Yeah. Look, obviously you're in Carlton, but there are other locations that people can access your services. Whereabouts?
Yeah, we've got physical locations right across as far north as Epping, all the way down to Geelong. We're out in Sunshine, Deer Park, Wyndham, Carlton. Have I missed any,
Craigieburn.
Mark? Craigieburn.
Epping.
So certainly in those outer suburbs where maybe people aren't quite as visible, and they do sort of...
Yeah.
Tend to disappear a little bit.
But we also really do important. Online counselling, and we're able to do that with people who are in regional and remote areas.
Your website, of course.
Yes, we have a Queer Space website, and we also have Drummond Street Services, which is ds.org.au.
Okay, look, it's been great having you here. There are so many other things we could talk about as well. But look, you know, we'll certainly have you back maybe to talk about family violence, maybe to talk about that homophobia and that sort of stuff, or some other issues, because I know that you also have things to do with drug and alcohol. We're covering something in that next week, in next week's show on The Informer. But look, it's been great having you both in here tonight.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you to our guest today, John Manwaring, who is from the VAC and is coordinating the hypothetical, which will be on in about 2.5 minutes' time.
So
7 o'clock. Yeah, definitely check out the live streaming, which is on the VAC Facebook page. If you go there, you'll be able to watch it. There is a big, big, big VAC announcement, which we can't talk about right now, but it will certainly be quite an interesting thing to find out about. So if you do go there, or else you can, of course, watch on Channel 31 and watch the hypothetical live. It's certainly a lot of fun and worth watching because it actually looks at quite a few of the issues that we've been talking about with Drummond Street Services tonight. We'd also like to thank Karen and Mark from Queer Space. It's been great to have them in the studio tonight. Today's show was produced by me, David Gale, with additional producing by Paul McClure. And, of course, The Informer will be back tomorrow at 6:30. It's been great to have the break, but it's actually great to be back again with you on The Informer each night of the week, Monday through Thursday at 6:30. Up next is World Wide Wave. I'm David Gale.
I'm Paul McClure. Good night.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.